The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
1280 The Patriot is WWTC Minneapolis St. Paul. FM 107.5 K298 CO Minneapolis. Intelligent radio.
With SRN News, I'm Michael Harrington in Washington. Today is the 21st anniversary of the terrorist attacks on 9/11 back in 2001. Communities all across America holding remembrances, special church services in many communities. A 9/11 survivor, retired New York City Fire Chief Matt Bruce, says this anniversary is a very solemn occasion for America.
It's not about any of us that are living. It's about those that we lost and the 343 brave FDNY firefighters who were given credit for getting 20,000 people out of the World Trade Center. We were all part of a team. We all knew what we had to do. It was a very dangerous day, a day we remember, and we honor those that we lost. We will never forget.
He spoke with the Salem Radio Network and New York City family members of 9/11 victims once again gathered at the city's Memorial Plaza this morning. This is SRN News.
Sideline Sanity with Michelle Tafoya.
Seems as though every generation thinks, oh, you don't understand, you don't know history, no one's being taught about slavery. And it's like, I learned about it in second grade. It's almost this notion that each generation thinks there hasn't been enough attention paid. And so we see more and more of a focus on it.
Streaming on Apple Podcasts and SalemPodcastNetwork.com.
AM 1280, The Patriot.
A successful baseball coach gets the offer of a lifetime.
We need a new coach. I'm looking at it.
I'm Coach Brooks. I love this game.
When his methods reveal his faith, two worlds collide.
Your job description at this school reads coach, not pastor.
I'm being forced to choose between providing for my family and doing what God called me to do.
This is bigger than baseball. It's bigger than you.
Champions live here.
Running the Bases. In theaters Friday. Rated PG. Tickets and showtimes at runningthebasesmovie.com.
You just keep winning.
Warning, warning, warning. Once you taste the Rack Shack's Patriot Burger, other burgers will never measure up.
Hey, I'm Nick Anderson, general manager of AM 1280 The Patriot, and we've partnered with my friend Keith Hittner Sr. from the Rack Shack Barbecue to create a burger worthy of the Patriot name.
It's a half-pound burger that's red, white, and blue through and through. American cheese on top, and the American flag proudly waves over the bun. The Patriot Burger comes with your choice of any of our delectable sides, like our famous hand-cut fries, all just for $12.80.
Best burger in town as far as I'm concerned, and it's $12.80 anytime, any day. Try it today at the Rack Shack Barbecue at the Cedar Cliff Center at Nichols and Cliff in Eagan.
Be careful. Once you try a Patriot Burger, you may never go back to a regular burger.
That's the Rack Shack Barbecue at RackShackBarbecue.com.
Get that Rack Shack attack. Rack Shack Barbecue. Ooh, 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 yeah.
Turn market volatility into opportunity today by investing with the big institutions, not against them. Many people are getting taken advantage of by Wall Street. Learn why their returns are so much better than the average novice 401k investor. Learn the skills to be a better steward of your own money. Call for a free in-center or virtual investing class today at 952-814-4410. Call Online Trading Academy at 952-814-4410 or go to learnwithota.com.
Giving your computer problems the boot. Arby's Computer Service.
Hi, this is Randy with Arby's Computer Service. You have heard me advertise on this and other stations for years and have trusted us for your IT needs, and I thank you for that. We now have an immediate need for a network server tech in our organization. If you or someone you know has a year or more business experience supporting these environments and is looking to work for a company like ours, I would like to speak with you. We are very competitive with other large companies for pay and benefits, including health and retirement planning. But because we are smaller, our environment is friendly and more flexible than some of the larger IT companies. You can can do your job, and it can actually be fun doing so working for us. Call me today to determine if you have the requirements for the position so that we can move forward and you can become part of our team. We can be reached at 763-441-3884, or you can email me, randy@rbsmn.com. I look forward to hearing from you.
Giving your computer problems the boot, Arby's Computer Service.
Hi, I'm Anthony Commerce with Commerce Water. Let us build you a long-lasting, high-efficiency water softener. If you contact us now, you'll get $400 off our new wet technology water softener. Do it right the first time. Contact commerce.com.
Sightseeing in Paris, at the mall in Bloomington, or on horseback in Dallas. We're where you are. Listen to AM 1280, The Patriot, at odyssey.com or with the free Odyssey app.
Portions of this program may have been pre-recorded.
The views expressed on the following program do not necessarily represent those of this station or its management.
It's time for the World of Aviation, sponsored by Academy College of Aviation in Bloomington and by Thunderbird Aviation, with locations at Flying Cloud Airport in Eden Prairie and at the Crystal Airport. Here now is your host, Al Momberg.
Thanks, Doc. This morning we're going to talk about dispatch centers. What exactly is a dispatch center at the airlines? What do they do? Joining us now is a guy who has a lot of experience in this field. Elias Andrews started working with flight operations while in the military and is now preparing the next generation of aircraft dispatchers at Academy College of Aviation. AA, welcome back to the World of Aviation.
Thank you, Al. Thanks for having me.
Where did the moniker AA come from? Your first name starts with an E. Where did AA come from? I am so confused.
No, that's perfectly fine. Obviously, I spent time in the military, and in the military, we do not get to choose our nicknames. So it is a military branch nickname. It basically boils down to that guy. That is basically what the nickname means. What happened was coordination between a lot of different subunits, between a multi-force group out in Egypt. So there would be contingents from France, Japan, Australia, Canada, and many more to name. But nobody really knew who I was, but I would go around and coordinate all these things. So they would just refer to me as the aviation guy. And then that eventually became Aviation Andrews, what we know as AA today.
Very good. We're gonna get into your background in just a bit, but today is the 21st anniversary of the terrorist attacks that took place in this country on 9/11. How big a role did the airlines dispatch centers play in getting all those aircraft down so quickly and safely?
I think that the role they played was absolutely pivotal. If we go back to that solemn day to identify the actions that had to have been taking place, there's so much coordination when it comes to diverting a single flight. So if we were to look at a flight due to weather that was not emergent, but there's weather ahead of it, there's quite a significant amount of work that has to be done in an operation center to helping the pilot identify an airport that the aircraft, given its own specs, can land safely at, versus an emergency where you start losing systems on the aircraft. That obviously bumps up the stress a little bit. And all of the coordination that it goes to take one of those aircrafts to finding, you know, an airport with long enough runway that can have the payment classification number to be able to support the weight of an aircraft classification number or the overall weight of the aircraft of the flight. All of this, before we even talk about 9/11, is a task-saturated process. So something as 9/11 happening, we're happening to do this on such a larger scale, even before they started to set aircraft on the ground when they sanitized the national airspace. You saw groups like United already ground their fleet, where they were trying to get every possible aircraft they could onto the ground. I mean, it's an extensive amount of work, and, you know, my hat goes off. I was obviously too young at the time to be serving as a dispatcher. You'd have to be 23. I was much younger at that time. But listening to the stories and talking to people that were there on that day working those shifts has been absolutely incredible, and it takes a significant amount of work to work with so many different crews to find out which airports are open and available for aircraft and which ones can still take a couple more aircraft.
We're talking about diverting an aircraft. This is, golly, probably 25 years ago, maybe. My wife was flying from Denver back to Minneapolis, and I was watching it on FlightAware on the computer, watching her flight. And there were storms that were moving into the Twin Cities, and her flight all of a sudden hung a left and diverted to Fargo. And I so I knew that I didn't have to pick her up at the scheduled time. What goes through the process in the dispatch center to determine whether that plane should have gone to Fargo versus Duluth or any other aircraft? What that process, the thought process?
There is a lot of thought process that goes into that. I'll just kind of go from cradle to grave so that we can kind of see the whole process. So we put together the plan. Plan's an awesome plan. We put the aircraft in the air. We start flight following it from the moment it takes off. We're looking ahead. The pilot has the airborne weather radar, which is a great system that helps identify storms that are in front of them, and they can change it to different scalable measures and then different slices to figure out exactly what the size of the storm is. But nothing beats the radar information that is given to us by the National Weather Service there at the dispatch desk. So for us to be able to sit there and monitor the flight, I constantly look at it from a three-concept spectrum. I think about where the aircraft came from to where it is now versus where the storm's at. I look at where it's physically at now versus the storm, and then I think about progressing through. If we were to continue on this path, at what point in time will we reach the storm? Now, as a guideline, we generally want to stay 20 nautical miles away from any thunderstorm. So I set what I refer to as decision gates, which are time frames where I'm going to check back with the flight and evaluate exactly the change in situation from the 15 minutes ago till now, and then set another decision gate in 15 minutes, and we'll constantly continue to monitor the storm as we get closer and closer. Once we get within about 50 nautical miles, that's where the hard conversation has to happen, where I have to communicate with the pilot in command and identify to them that this is no longer realistic. This storm ended up being bigger, or it's in a position that is now going to put us in danger should we continue this direction. Thunderstorms are absolute killers of aircraft. Lightning from a thunderstorm can take out our communication. It could damage our navigation. The high of wind shear and the TNT or the thunderstorm turbulence or in thunderstorm turbulence can affect the aircraft and overstress the flying surface of the aircraft, which can break a wing and have it obviously crash. And that's something that we don't want to see. So I'll communicate to the pilot in command, and I will tell them that it's no longer safe to continue. We will find ourselves in a thunderstorm if we maintain the same plan. So we need to then execute our backup plan. If at the beginning of the plan we already knew that thunderstorms were a possibility, chances are the dispatcher and the pilot have already agreed to an alternate airport, which means all of the research on the length of the runway and its capability to not only handle the aircraft, but actually handle the passengers once the aircraft comes in. We have to have a place to keep them and ensure that they are sheltered from the elements of the weather, and also make sure that they're fed during that timeline. When we go into when we go into identifying what is the best suitable alternate, there are some company-based things and some safety-based things that obviously have to be taken care of. I talk about the safety-based thing as being the protection of the passengers, but then we talk about the operational side of things. We also want to choose an alternate that once this thunderstorm does clear, that we can get the aircraft back into the system to ensure that no further cancellations have to take place.
I want to mention that my wife's flight that was diverted to Fargo, by the time they reached Fargo, they did not land. They just turned around and headed back to MSP because the storm was moving quite rapidly. And they didn't land at Fargo. They flew back and landed without incident at MSP. So the system works great. It truly does. You know, when I think about 9/11, AA, I believe it was a small airport. Was it Alaska or somewhere up in that area that more than one commercial airliner landed at this airport, and they didn't have any hotels, and so the townspeople took in the passengers. And the follow-up story on that is that these families and the townspeople, they had a growing family, each and every household. Do you know the airport I'm talking about? I'm trying to remember where that was.
I'm not familiar with the one you're speaking about exactly. I do know there was a similar city of Gander, may have been Gander Airport. They took in a bunch. Yep. Once they closed the airspace to international travel, you had no other option but to divert. And it's either Greenland, so that seems like that would be the better option.
That was it. Yeah, it was Gander. And what a remarkable story in itself, how everybody came together. I mean, the world community really came together on this day 21 years ago. It's remarkable when you think back on it. AA, we're going to take a break. We're going to learn more about you personally, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about dispatch centers again, and we're going to learn what a student that starts learning dispatch at Academy College of Aviation, what that entails. It's an interesting hour, and most people don't think about dispatch when you think about flying. You're listening to The World of Aviation. AA is our guest, Elias Andrews. The World of Aviation, sponsored by Academy College of Aviation, located in Bloomington at 35W and 494, and by Thunderbird Aviation with two locations at Flying Cloud Airport in Eden Prairie and at the Crystal Airport. This is The World of Aviation.
AM 1280, The Patriot.
In today's world, time is precious, and Thunderbird Aviation is here to save it by offering world-class charter services for you to avoid planning an entire travel day for a two-hour flight. Skip the airport trips and long security lines by chartering a flight to your next family or business destination. Thunderbird's charter flights allows you to avoid crowded airports and adjust your departure. Visit ThunderbirdAviation.com to request a quote or email charter at ThunderbirdAviation.com today.
Has your work-life balance taken a toll by working from home? The Eden 100 building has exactly what you need to reestablish your work-life balance. Affordable office leases available immediately in a private office setting. The Eden 100 building will provide you an opportunity to separate your 9-to-5 from the family and get back into a healthy routine. Conveniently located off Eden Avenue and Highway 100. For details and showings, contact property management at 952-767-0327. That's 952-767-0327.
I am lovable, capable, and worthwhile.
I am loved without strings, and I am never alone.
Treehouse is an organization that creates a safe space for teens through one-on-one mentoring, support groups, and activities. At Treehouse, teens are introduced to a loving God who will always be with them and accepts them exactly as they are. When teens are rooted in this living hope, transformation begins.
I have a future.
The Treehouse mission is to end hopelessness among teens. You can help. Visit treehousehope.org.
Hello, this is Joe Cordell. Cordell & Cordell is a firm that practices family law exclusively. We focus on only one area of the law to maximize our strength and effectiveness as advocates for clients that have everything on the line, their homes, retirement, savings, and most importantly, their children. We're the partner our clients count on. If we can be of help to you, give us a call.
Schedule an appointment with one of Cordell & Cordell's Twin Cities attorneys, a partner men can count on. CordellCordell.com.
The aviation industry is hiring, meaning there's no time like the present to start your career in aviation. This is Al Malmberg. Academy College supports you while you make your dreams come true. Earn a 2 or 4 year degree in business, IT, or aviation. Choose your career-specific courses that enhance your knowledge in your chosen field. If aviation is your calling, enroll in the Commercial Pilot, Aviation Management, or the FAA-approved dispatch course. Academy College makes the college transition easy, no matter what your current circumstances. You have the flexibility to attend courses in person or virtually to fit your schedule. Academy College offers small class sizes, hands-on instruction, and a competitive atmosphere to ensure you graduate as a true competitor in the marketplace. Live up to your potential, reach your dreams, and do it all with Academy support. Start by emailing admissions at academycollege.edu or call 952-851-0066. Next quarter begins October 3rd. You're listening to The World of Aviation. Our guest is Elias Andrews, AA. He is the head of the dispatch program at Academy College, and we're learning about dispatch centers. You know, I think back to 21 years ago, AA, and, you know, we were talking about the weather, and you got the Weather Bureau that you can see in advance storms that are developing. But on this day 21 years ago, this was something new. Everybody was flying by the seat of their pants, literally, and that goes for the dispatch centers also. Can you give us an idea, at the inside look, of what those dispatch centers were going through, scrambling, trying to find appropriate airports for all of these commercial airliners? I mean, think of all the airlines that had planes in the air. We're talking thousands of aircraft that had to be brought down as quickly as possible.
We didn't know if there were bombs aboard any more aircraft. I mean, we had no idea. If you could, look into that crystal ball of yours and explain to us what they were going through on this day 21 years ago.
Absolutely, Alan. This is a conversation that's very near and dear to me. Technology is something that I don't take for granted because I understand, obviously, as an instructor for a dispatch course where we have to do everything manually and we have to do things based on how things were back in the day versus having the technology that a dispatcher currently has on the desk are quite a bit different. So taking a look at the level of coordination that needs to happen, we utilized our phone a lot better back then. I think that nowadays we have so many different texting options for crew in the ACAR system, which is a text-based system that allows us to send messages to the pilots without there happening to be a verbal communication. So a lot more of what we were doing in the form of coordination were phone calls. We're calling to these different airports, contacting our personnel on the ground to identify, you know, how many parking spots are available, what jet bridges do we still have, is there any out terminal parking available for us to put aircraft down, and if so, how much. So within that, then we get better communication in the operations center to where we have a lot of dispatchers that are reaching out to other dispatchers and saying, hey, we can still fit 5 more aircraft at this airport, or this one's full, don't send anyone this direction. There was a huge amount of communication that was necessary to get that accomplished, and a lot of it was verbal. And I'm not here to turn this into a generational thing, but when we think about communication changes from Generation X to Generation Y and then further into Generation Z, we have as a society become more of a text-based society, and verbal communication doesn't happen as often nowadays as it did back then. So you can see the quality difference between the two of them. When we're dealing with that, the previous generation, that's the only forms of communication they had, so they maximized what they had, very similar to what we do, where we maximize what we have available. Obviously, coming out with the next RAD, which is our radar system that was then implemented that gives us a lot more information, we have a lot better understanding of the size of the precipitation inside of these storms. So we have much, much more intel. You were really on point when you identified that they were flying by the seat of their pants because you had knowledge of what was going on. That knowledge may have been 5, 10, 15 minutes old. Thunderstorms that average on a build of an hour, you're probably looking at a massive amount of building or deteriorating within 15 minutes just because of the scale of the storm and how quickly they could build or dissipate.
Let's go back to, let's look at your background. You grew up in a large military family or a family with a large background in the military. And right out of high school, you enlisted in the Army, if I remember correctly. And how did that lead to being interested in aviation and dispatch? I know that with the 101st Airborne, you served 2 tours in Afghanistan and 1 in Egypt. So how did this military service play a role in you going into dispatch and the importance of it?
That is an excellent question, and this is going to be a great story to tell. So when I went into the military, I knew that I wanted to serve, but I didn't know in what capacity it was going to be. I think my original thought was to be a military police officer. So I went down to the recruiting office, ended up getting a contract, going into the military, and there were 2 offerings. They had me take a test, and they said there are 2 major offerings in which you basically have been identified to have strengths in. And I was like, well, that sounds perfect. Which are they? And the gentleman told me that a laundry and textile expert was number 2. And I said, okay, I'm definitely not going to do somebody's laundry for a living. And they said number 2 is exactly. And number 2 ended up being flight operations. Well, if you tell an 18-year-old flight operations, they're thinking, this must be Black Ops. This is going to be like the video games. This is going to be awesome. And so I signed up for that. I went to basic training my first time in Fort Benning. Some things transpired in Fort Benning to where all of the different classes in Fort Benning had to be shipped up to Fort Jackson. And then I finished up my basic training there. They then shipped me out to Fort Rucker, Alabama, where I became a flight operations specialist. That's really where I got my start, and that's kind of the funny part, is basic training tends to be the funnier part of one's career because, you know, it's a whole bunch of different job fields getting together to kind of do the same initial training. Now, from there, I was able to kind of identify early on, based on my peers, that I had a natural talent for it. I couldn't call what was going on a skill. I just was better than everybody else, and just my upbringing in the military and helping out with family business kind of made me really good in inventory and tracking. So I had a bit of a head start when it came to that. So while everybody else was really doing well with bees, I was definitely an A student throughout the course. From there, I was shipped off to Fort Campbell, Kentucky. I got an opportunity to choose whatever unit I wanted. And you know what? I saw the Band of Brothers, and I was like, I've got to go. I got to go 3rd BCT, Band of Brothers, the 506th Infantry Regiment in the 101st. So when I went up there, I found out that they have one of the most astute and esteemed training programs for flight operations, which kind of blew me away because it's mostly a combat training unit that deploys. Out there, I was the subject matter expert for helicopters and sling loading. And from there, I progressed to overseeing some of the very few fixed-wing aircraft that are actually used within the United States Army. Most of our fixed-wing support usually comes from the Air Force. So you really got to be the top percent of flight operation to even get an opportunity to be able to dispatch in the Army. It's usually the Air Force that gets the better experience. So from there, I did one tour to Afghanistan. I was in a place called Bagram and Sharana. We did flight operations. We did cargo transfer, passenger transport. We did attack and observation. From there, I was then transferred to the 1st TSC out of Fort Bragg, and they had deployed me. I'll use the terminology deployment loosely, out to Egypt because it's supposed to be a peacekeeping mission. Once I got out there, the attack or the search for Mumbark, their president, had begun. So it turned what was a peaceful combat into somewhat of a war zone for a couple of months. So I basically went from one combat zone to another. During that time, we worked on extraction, getting Americans out of Egypt during the unrest, and obviously did the best we could to kind of keep our distance from what was going on politically while still maintaining surveillance and doing our job out there. I then returned back to the 101st, where I deployed for a second time out to Salerno, Afghanistan, located in the province of Khost. And again, that one was a little bit different because instead of having hands-on flight operations within tactical ops, I was actually the very first time of me being an instructor. That's where my instructor career began. As a subject matter expert, I was training the dispatchers on radio etiquette. I was training them on meteorology. I was training them on flight operations and just kind of working them to hone their skills so that they could better support the operation.
Now, AA, we just had a caller that asked a question that is a very good question. In the event of a wartime scenario coming to this country, what type backup systems do we have to deal with airlines that are in the air?
So we have escort operations that are developed. We have Naval and Air Force teams that are trained to handle those type of situations. And I'm not going to say that this is isolated. We've had similar incidents before. If we go back to the 70s and we look at the Korea air flight in Russian airspace that was shot down, mm-hmm. There are extreme measures that can be taken to ensure the safety of the sovereign nation. For us in the United States, we generally will go up to the aircraft. We'll have a two-man team, one of the lead or what we call the PIC. And this is where PIC gets kind of different for military. So PIC is the pilot in command versus the captain, right? Aircraft as a captain, but a PIC in a team formation is the commander of the entire team. So multiple aircraft under them. So the PIC is going to roll up next to the window of the aircraft, and they'll usually write on a piece of paper a frequency for the person in the aircraft to call in, which is usually our civilian military or either the civilian or the military emergency frequency. And they'll communicate with them and let them know where they need to land and they need to get on the ground immediately or they will be fired upon. So we have a lot of stuff already in place. We probably or more than likely have enough artillery options as well, but generally trying to communicate with somebody, because when you bust a airspace like that, chances are it's a mistake. Issues with the navigation system, you are lost, you don't know where you're at. So usually just having that guidance to get you to the ground safely so that no further action needs to take place is usually all we need. But we have more than enough systems in place and processes in place to be able to keep our country safe, even during an attack like that.
I'm glad you brought up the Russia-Korean jet incident. A tragedy, not an incident, tragedy. What went wrong on that day? The Russian pilots, I'm sure they were second-guessing everything that was happening and when they were given the orders to shoot down this commercial airliner. I'm sure they had doubts about what they were doing was correct. What went wrong, in your opinion?
So the first thing I want to identify with what went wrong is we need to understand the time frame. This was quite a long time ago. This was the 70s. But on top of that, we need to understand that there are cultural differences in the way that we really structure the command for giving such an order. So in Russia, it's actually the air traffic controllers that can give the command to shoot an aircraft out of the air. They delegate it all the way down to air traffic controllers, the one that normally control the aircraft. They identified that the aircraft was within the airspace of Russia. Basically, what happened is the Air Korean flight, I believe they took off from Alaska and they were heading to Korea. And what had happened was there was an issue with their navigation system. So they actually started to drift into Russian airspace. As the story goes, the Russian pilot did the same thing that I just talked about. They went up to the side window, were trying to communicate with them, and were unable to communicate per the pilots. As far as the cockpit voice recorder and any conversation going inside the flight, they've identified that there was no type of evidence that identified that action was taken. So I can't speak as to whether it did or did not. Only identifying that the evidence showed that there was no action from the pilot to even identify there was an aircraft flying close to theirs, which most people in the United States would surmise to one case or another. When an aircraft gets that close to you, you will say something. But they ended up firing on it, and they ended up crashing shortly after. Do they have the right to do that? Yes. They are in their airspace. You have you can take whatever means are necessary to ensure the safety of your sovereign nation. That hasn't changed and won't change anytime soon. But
we are going to take a break. We'll pick up where we left off. Elias Andrews is our guest. He is with the dispatch program at Academy College of Aviation, and we'll get into the dispatch program itself and talk about that and how you become a dispatcher. It's a very important position. You're listening to The World of Aviation, sponsored by Academy College of Aviation, located in Bloomington at 35W and 494, and by Thunderbird Aviation, with locations at Flying Cloud Airport in Eden Prairie and at the Crystal Airport. This is The World of Aviation.
AM 1280, The Patriot.
In today's world, time is precious, and Thunderbird Aviation is here to save it by offering world-class charter services for you to avoid planning an entire travel day for a two-hour flight. Skip the airport trips and long security lines by chartering a flight to your next family or business destination. Thunderbird's charter flights allows you to avoid crowded airports and adjust your departure. Visit ThunderbirdAviation.com to request a quote or email charter at ThunderbirdAviation.com today.
Has your work-life balance taken a toll by working from home? The Eden 100 building has exactly what you need to reestablish your work-life balance. Affordable office leases available immediately in a private office setting. The Eden 100 building will provide you an opportunity to separate your 9-to-5 from the family and get back into a healthy routine. Conveniently located off Eden Avenue and Highway 100. For details and showings, contact property management at 952-767-0327. That's 952-767-0327.
Salmon fishing in Alaska, at an amusement park in Green Bay, or taking a stroll through Loring Park.
We're where you are.
Stream AM 1280 The Patriot at Odyssey.com or with the free Odyssey app.
Dad, guess what?
What?
You are going to be a grandfather.
That's great. Not too long ago, moments like this with my daughter would have been a challenge. It was a long road for me to find myself again after Vietnam. It was my neighbor Jim, another Vietnam veteran, who finally convinced me that I could still connect with my family and find that fulfilling life I'd lost. And I went for help down at the VA. If I can take that first step after almost 50 years, I know other veterans can too. Visit MakeTheConnection.net to find out more.
Whether you're preparing for a typical Sunday morning or a special holiday service, you'll find an array of helpful, creative tools from Worship House Media. From countdown timers to sermon illustrations, visit worshiphousemedia.com. That's worshiphousemedia.com, a division of Salem Media Group.
There are few things in life better than leaving the confines of old Mother Earth, putting the nose of your airplane on the center line, and going full throttle down the runway. You put a little back pressure on the stick, and the plane knows when to lift off. It's a feeling you can only get being a pilot. Al Momberg here for Thunderbird Aviation. You can experience this by taking a $99 discovery flight at Thunderbird. You'll go up with a certified flight instructor, and you will actually take the controls of the plane and fly it. You'll feel the exhilaration, excitement, and gratification that you've heard me talk about so many times over the years. Thunderbird Aviation is where I learned to fly, and they are simply the best.
They have a variety of aircraft you can rent, and you can always be assured that they've been maintained to the highest of standards. The first step, though, is to take a discovery flight. Visit their website at thunderbirdaviation.com. Thunderbird Aviation, located at Flying Cloud Airport in Eden Prairie and at the Crystal Airport. To learn more about the discovery flight, go to thunderbirdaviation.com. You're listening to The World of Aviation. Our guest is AA, Elias Andrews. Speaking of Discovery Flights, John Berg, who's the program director of the Patriot, he's going to be doing a Discovery Flight the week of the 25th. And on the 25th, a couple of weeks from today, what we're going to be doing is we're going to have the instructor that he's going to go up on with John to talk, tell John what he's going to be doing on that day. And then that week he's going to do the Discovery Flight, and then John and I are going to talk about what that was like for him to go up, and he's just really excited to do this. It's going to be fun. It truly is. Back to AA. All right, let's talk about you go to Academy College, and you want to learn how to be a dispatcher. You want to be in the dispatch center, a very, very important job. What are the minimum requirements that you have to have to get into the dispatch program?
The minimum requirements to get into the dispatch program is that you must have at least a high school diploma and must be at least 21 years of age during the actual testing. To get licensed and actually work in the capacity of a dispatcher, you must be 23, but we have a couple of different systems and some connections within the business that will basically put you in a crew scheduling spot or maybe work on the ramp to get you extra experience as you wait for your 23rd birthday.
Do you have to be a pilot to go into the dispatch program?
No, you do not have to be a pilot. I can basically take somebody of zero aviation knowledge, being that you've never seen an aircraft in your life, to ready for the airline within my 10-week program.
Hmm. So what all is I'm a student, and I'm coming in fresh. I have no idea what I'm looking at. What am I going to learn? What are some of the things that you teach at the college?
So some of the things that I teach at the college that help take people from that bottom level of not knowing aviation to becoming a learner of subject matter expertry, I start off with meteorology. I teach them about thunderstorms, tornadoes, hurricanes, how to stay away from things. I teach them how to conduct an analysis on weather reports to develop a 3D image of what's actually going on within the air system and within the atmosphere to ensure the safety of the flight. From there, I transition them to regulation, where I help improve them litigiously in their understanding of not just regulation, but aviation law, and understanding the spirit of the regulation as to why something exists. Sometimes I like to refer to regulations as a choose-your-own-adventure. Somebody prior to this moment made a massive mistake, and so now we have a rule set in to ensure that nobody makes a mistake like that again. From there, I transitioned to teaching them about air traffic control so that they understand the other component of the trifecta, being the pilots, the dispatchers, and the air traffic controllers, get them to understand their job and get them to understand the different departments that fall under air traffic control, from the main ship out there in D.C. to breaking down to the different en route air traffic control centers that have jurisdictions for the en route portion throughout the United States, all the way down to TRACON that handles approaches and departures, down to the tower, where we have multiple sub divisions within the tower that help people get clearances, do a little bit of taxiing on the surface of the airport, and giving takeoff clearances. So there's a lot of information that goes in there. On top of that, they're going to be trained on a 14 CFR Part 25 transport category aircraft. For our program, we use the Boeing 777 extended range 200 series. And they'll learn all the systems, and they'll learn navigation, understanding all the subsystems for navigation on the aircraft, like the flight management system. And they'll learn how to basically navigate from airport to airport through the en route structure, through the climb, the descent. There's a lot of information that gets covered. It's really like trying to get a drink of water through a fire hose. It's a lot of information. But because my course is a lot longer than conditional ones or traditional ones, where they usually run a 6-week program, I extend mine out to 10 weeks to allow less class hours per day to make it more palatable. it kind of drops the stress a little bit. And I believe that most professionals would identify that low stress conditions actually improves a learner's retention of information.
I don't know if this is on subject or not, but the domestic flights certainly are a lot different than international flights. And an example, a very good friend of mine was a captain at Northwest Airlines, and he had to fly over to Baghdad. This is towards the end of the war. And he had to fly over, I think he was flying a DC-10. It might have been a 747, but either way, it was one of the big jets. And he had to go to Baghdad to pick up troops coming back home. I went out to the dispatch center with him for him to discuss the flight. And it was quite interesting, the process and how thick the folder was of the procedures of going into Baghdad. You know, a steep descent, number one. Abnormal flight, to say the least. If you were the dispatcher, and you've got to work out a plan for a jet going into Baghdad at the end of the Gulf the war, what would that entail? I mean, to this day, I'm still mesmerized by that because it was so fascinating.
Absolutely. So when we look at a domestic flight, it is very, very minimal. So when we transition to an international, I'll only talk about the differences between the two. So with an international flight, first we put together a plan the same with any other flight. We would build the route. We would identify the two airports, choose some alternates just in case some weather were to pop up en route. More than likely choose a couple of route alternatives just in case, you know, there's some thunderstorms. Obviously, flying over oceans add their own level to it. When you have thunderstorms over the continent, or what we refer to as continental thunderstorms versus maritime thunderstorms, the maritime thunderstorms can be a lot more hectic to deal with, as they have an unlimited amount of energy, being that the water is located in that area for them to then vaporize or evaporate into the thunderstorm to make them a little bit more chaotic. So when we start looking at the route, we're going to have to overfly some countries. So we're going to have to reach out, get overfly permits. We're also going to have to get landing permits. So these obviously cost money, and the reason for the overfly and landing permits are the landing permit take care of, obviously, you using their airport and landing on their surface, as you constantly have a large transport category aircraft constantly landing on the surface. Over time, there's going to be stress fatigues, and you're going to need to repair that. So that goes into paying for it. It's an investment into the airport, basically. But the overfly permits start by paying for air traffic control services. So that's the way that they actually get the air traffic controllers paid that are dealing with a lot of this en route traffic. So we'll have to pay for an overfly permit for every single country we're going to overfly, and then get that landing permit. On top of that, we have customs requirements, a bunch of other things that are really complicated. So yeah, you go from a dispatch release domestically to from about 50 pages to easily 500 pages very quickly.
You know, here's another question for you, and two examples that I can give. One was a DC-10 that did a crash landing in Sioux City, Iowa. You know, they were on the honker right away with air traffic control. Do you think they were in contact with the dispatch center? The other one was John Hansen on a 747 heading over to Japan, and over the Bering Strait, they had a hard over rudder. And they had to, it was a very dangerous scenario. It's amazing that plane stayed in the air. They made their way back to Anchorage, where they made a successful landing. We know that they were in contact with air traffic control, control center. Were they in touch, with the dispatch centers?
So in my experience, it really has a lot more to do with altitude. So with altitude comes time. If you have the time to be able to communicate it to air traffic or to the dispatch center, the operations center, then you definitely want to do that. But sometimes these incidents and accidents and failure of systems happen so low altitude, the only person you get to talk to is the air traffic controller. Now, right. Me, my preference is obviously to know that there's an emergency, but my preference over everything is life. So if you don't have time to communicate to me as the dispatcher of your flight, and you are just going to take the actions that are necessary for you to land safely, I 100% support that. But if you have enough time to reach out to me, I have resources available to me, and my managing of those resources can help get things in place for you. That can mean that once you get to that airport, we have options. That's what the big thing ends up being. So when you have those two instances where obviously one ended up absolutely horrifically and the other one was a safe landing, I'm going to venture to say that altitude played a huge role in both of those by giving the pilot a lot more time. So if we go back and look at probably the most infamous incident that happened in the near past, which would have been the Miracle on the Hudson, this was a very
low altitude
situation. Absolutely, that Captain Sully had to deal with. There was a procedure set in place on how to ditch the aircraft, and there's one button on there that actually turns basically the aircraft into a boat. So it has inflatables in there to kind of close up all the aircraft turns and orifices, basically. And he didn't have time to hit that, but he still landed it safely. He did an absolutely fantastic job. It's just checklist was not prepared for him being so low altitude for a ditching. The ditching, I think, was more representative of being over the Pacific or Atlantic Ocean and you being at flight level 390 and having plenty of time to go through a checklist of this size, this magnitude. So time and altitude tend to be the number one identifier, but getting the trucks rolled and having all the people in place is obviously something that air traffic control can do. Dispatch can communicate that to air traffic control. But at the end of the day, we really want the best case scenario. And if that means that the dispatcher doesn't get communicated to, then I would say that's fine. I've submitted plenty of safety reports in my life that have just said, found out about the emergency after the aircraft was down safe, pilot called in to identify what the emergency was, end of safety report.
Double A, we're going to take a break. Elias Andrews is our guest, and he teaches the course of being a dispatcher. Very, very important job at Academy College of Aviation. You're listening to The World of Aviation, sponsored by Academy College of Aviation, located in Bloomington at the crossroads of 35W and 494, and by Thunderbird Aviation, where I learned to fly, two locations, Flying Cloud Airport in Eden Prairie and at the Crystal Airport. This is The World of Aviation.
AM 1280, The Patriot.
Has your work-life balance taken a toll by working from home? The Eden 100 building has exactly what you need to reestablish your work-life balance. Affordable office leases available immediately in a private office setting. The Eden 100 building will provide you an opportunity to separate your 9-to-5 from the family and get back into a healthy routine. Conveniently located off Eden Avenue and Highway 100. For details and showings, contact property management at 952-767-0327. That's 952-767-0327.
In today's world, time is precious, and Thunderbird Aviation is here to save it by offering world-class charter services for you to avoid planning an entire travel day for a two-hour flight. Skip the airport trips and long security lines by chartering a flight to your next family or business destination. Thunderbird's charter flights allows you to avoid crowded airports and adjust your departure. Visit ThunderbirdAviation.com to request a quote or email charter at ThunderbirdAviation.com today.
I was 9 weeks along and didn't know what else to do.
I felt helpless and I didn't want to leave it up to her, but I didn't know what to do or say.
I didn't know there were other options available.
I didn't know it was a baby with a beating heart at 18 days.
Hello, my name is Marian Koharski. I'm the director of Pro-Life Across America, the billboard people. So often we get calls just like this from men and women seeking help and alternatives. Our 800 hotline connects callers to the services they need for pregnancy, adoption, as well as post-abortion assistance. If you know someone who is pregnant or in need of confidential counseling or would like to support the work of Pro-Life Across America, please call 1-800-366-7773 or check us out on the web, ProLifeAcrossAmerica.com. Pro-Life Across America is educational, non-political, and tax-deductible.
A baby's heart is beating 18 days from conception.
Pro-Life Across America, the billboard people.
The aviation industry is hiring, meaning there's no time like the present to start your career in aviation. This is Al Momberg. Academy College supports you while you make your dreams come true. Earn a 2 or 4 year degree in business, IT, or aviation. Choose your career-specific courses that enhance your knowledge in your chosen field. If aviation is your calling, enroll in the Commercial Pilot, Aviation Management, or the FAA-approved dispatch course. Academy College makes the college transition easy, no matter what your current circumstances. You have the flexibility to attend courses in person or virtually to fit your schedule.
Academy College offers small class sizes, hands-on instruction, and a competitive atmosphere to ensure you graduate as a true competitor in the marketplace. Live up to your potential, reach your dreams, and do it all with Academy support. Start by emailing admissions at academycollege.edu or call 952-851-0066. Next quarter begins October 3rd. You're listening to The World of Aviation. Our guest is AA Elias Andrews, who is in charge of the dispatch program at Academy College of Aviation. And as the commercial you just heard, their next quarter begins October 3rd. How do people go about getting into Academy College and the dispatch course? What's the process to get the ball rolling, AA?
So the process is a simple reach out. We have a great admission team that goes out there and obviously promotes the class, but reaching out either by phone or by computer, you can reach the sign up. Going to academycollege.edu and filling out an admission paperwork to identify that this is what you're interested in. From there, we will sit down with our absolutely amazing admission team. Currently, right now, we have Cottrell heading the program with Abigail supporting, and they'll sit down and they'll explain all the details of the program. They'll go through, obviously, some financial aid options if they are available for each individual student. And from there, they will be admitted into the course. And then once the course starts, again, October 3rd for us coming up, but we have many more quarters coming up after that, they'll be placed mm-hmm. in the class and then put in communication with me. And I'll give them usually a starter package of some information that they can kind of thumb through and get prepared for the course.
Every airline has a dispatch center?
Every 121. So to quickly identify, Part 91 covers all aircraft. Part 135 deals with aircraft usually less than nine seats and weighing less than 12,500 pounds. Anything with more seats or heavier than that is a 121 operation. So it's usually a large-scale airline.
One of the things I think is fascinating is when you are a dispatcher, once a year or five hours a year minimum, you have to observe flight crews conduct their regular operations. Does that mean you get to jump in the cockpit of an airliner and go wherever they're going to observe them?
Absolutely, that is correct. So basically what happens for 5 hours, and I'll be completely honest, I don't think I've ever done 5 hours in a year in my entire life. I'm like a 100, 200-hour guy myself. You know, if it's the weekend, I'm trying to go somewhere, I might as well learn en route. That's always been my thought. But when it comes to, you know, just identifying a flight, I'm going to watch them do what they do best. They are really open to questions. We have something that's referred to as sterile cockpit, which means that we'll have no non-essential conversation. It has to be 100% related to the takeoff through certain phases of flight, whether that be taxi, takeoff, and climb all the way up to 10,000 feet. Or up to the cruise altitude if your cruise altitude is less than 10,000 feet. But once we get out of sterile cockpit, you know, the questions are going. And I've never had two flights that were even remotely the same. The conversations change, the hazards change, so the conversation is really tailored towards the flight. What I like to do is I like to print off a dispatch release so that I have the same paperwork the pilot does and kind of go through there and see how the information is being utilized in the actual form of the flight.
Yeah, are the cockpit crews, are they generally acceptable, the idea of having someone in observing them?
I think that their understanding is pretty good. Obviously, if I was a threat of any type to them, I wouldn't be admitted onto the flight deck in the first place. But, yeah, I would say no real impact on that, or at least I've never experienced any heightened level of stress.
Let's look at the future of dispatch centers. Technology changing dramatically. What are we going to see in the next 10 years, 20 years, 30 years? Can you go look in your crystal ball and tell us where it's going?
I love living in the realm of fantasy, so I'm going to go ahead and take this full throttle. I think what I would like to see in flight operations going forward is I would like us to get away from 2D screen computers and kind of take more of a step into augmented reality to where we're not only looking at the thunderstorm, but we can actually have a three-dimensional view and run what-if operations, what-if I did this route? What if I did that route? What if I made this change? And physically be able to see it in a simulation. I think that would be great and a great tool for flight operations without turning this into a futuristic total recall type situation. I think that that's probably the best case scenario as far as what I think would be realistic for us to attain within the next 10 to 20 years.
And I would think that would really help pilots out, IFR pilots that fly into clouds and suddenly find themselves in an embedded thunderstorm, which is a real problem. Or am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. And right now what we have is the HUD system. This is the heads-up display. So they have the ability to pull down the screen on certain aircraft. Obviously, you have to have the technology on the aircraft. But it helps give them instrumentation, and it takes all the dash information below them and actually displays it up towards the windscreen of the aircraft so that they can physically see all of their instruments in the way that they're supposed to be displayed in a realistic scenario instead of being on a 2D screen below them. They get more, I wouldn't say it's a 3D image, but it's more closely to an augmented reality than what they have on their dash. So some of the stuff we already have in place, and that's why I feel that it could be realistic in the long term.
Yeah, and another question for you. In recent weeks, we've had some serious solar flares on the sun, from the sun, and it's disrupted our communication system. For example, this week I was in my studio here in the barn, and suddenly I lost my DirecTV signal. And my wife had hit her head on the dish while we were unloading 42 bags of concrete. And I thought, well, she misaligned it. So I'm out there tinkering with it, trying to get it aligned, and suddenly I realize, what am I doing? This is a solar flare scenario. Is that disrupting the communications of airlines and GPS of airlines?
So I can tell you, at least from my military experience, I've had blackouts due to solar flares before. Space weather is something that's incredibly important to me, and I think it's something we should be keeping a keen eye on at least once every 2 to 3 days. A dispatcher should be taking a look at space weather to see what the changes are. But as far as the impact for a solar flare like that and its behavior with the magnetosphere on Earth and its impact on satellite communication, it's definitely something that should be identified. But if we go back to the Carrington event where they had full-on blackouts or even the blackouts that they had in Canada, we've had instances before where it's been an issue. But throughout the years, our communication has come better, and obviously we have backup systems to our backup systems. So I don't think it will completely black out an airline anytime soon. But the possibility is always there.
And you look at how important GPS has become to every aircraft that I'm aware of anyway. If that goes down, can your backup systems handle it?
Yes, we can. We can still navigate by ground. Obviously, there is an initiative by the government to shut down a large number of VORs, which are very high-frequency omnidirectional radio range systems on the ground that use radio instead of using GPS to help navigate the aircraft. And all pilots are trained in how to utilize them just in case of an incident like this. So it would not be great economically speaking, but as far as continuing operation, I think it will just be a little hiccup in the day-to-day operations. There won't be a huge factor.
AA, it's been a pleasure having you back on the show, and good luck, and keep doing the work that you're doing. And dispatch centers are obviously very, very important. Appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Al.
Elias Andrews with Academy College of Aviation. I want to bring John Berg on now, and John is going to be doing a Discovery flight here in a couple of weeks. You are obviously a Twitter about this. You are excited.
I am pumped. This is going to be a lot of fun. I've been in small planes before. It's been a while. I enjoy flying. I'm really looking forward to this.
And we're gonna have the guy that you're going up with, Ethan Berry, is an instructor with Thunderbird Aviation. And on the 25th, we're going to have you two talking about what you're going to be going through. And then the following week, you're going to be doing the flight. And on October 2nd, I believe it is.
I think you're right.
Sunday, first Sunday in October, you and I are going to talk about the Discovery flight that you went on. And I got a feeling the grin will still be on your face.
The flight, it's going to be a good time. I'm really looking forward to this. I'm anxious to get up in the air. And, yeah, this has got me really excited.
All right. You've been listening to The World of Aviation, sponsored by Academy College of Aviation, located in Bloomington at 35W and 494, and by Thunderbird Aviation, with locations at Flying Cloud Airport in Eden Prairie and at the Crystal Airport. This is The World of Aviation.
soaking up the sun in Fiji, walking through the sculpture garden in Minneapolis, or standing in awe at the Grand Canyon. We're where you are. Stream AM 1280 The Patriot at Odyssey.com or with the free Odyssey app.
As a former congressman and the ranking member on the Judiciary Committee of the U.S. House of Representatives, Doug Collins knows what it means to fight for what he believes. And on every episode of the Doug Collins Podcast, he'll explore all topics from politics to life advice and blend them together for a well-rounded discussion that you can use to get the most out of your life. The Doug Collins Podcast. Subscribe today on Apple, Google, Spotify, and at SalemPodcastNetwork.com.
Foundations Christian Academy in Ham Lake is a Christian principle approach school. God's sovereignty and purpose is demonstrated to K through 8 students throughout the day. From math to science, monkey bars to the court. Visit learnatfoundations.org for more details. That's learnatfoundations.org.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.